Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Pinker.com Norwich City podcast, episode number 403, up into the 400s now. And the countdown is very much on. Next Friday, Norwich City will be back in action. Of course, fans sadly won't be there. We've talked about that at length, but we'll soon be turning our attentions to the football very firmly. I'm Dave Freezer. We're also coming to you on Future Radio 107.8 FM. And alongside me is Connor Southwell, Di Cunningham from Proud Canaries and Norwich City Women, and Chairman of Canaries Trust, Robin Saintie. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, good, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah, surprisingly well.
Yeah, good. Thank you, Dave.
Good to hear. Right. There's a lot going on in the world at the moment, isn't there? Which I think is probably focusing attentions on football at the moment. With everything that's going on, obviously the pandemic, the coronavirus, which is, you know, literally extended to us. All countries around the world, we've got the Black Lives Matter protests and everything that's going on globally with protests. There's environmental matters, there's Hong Kong, I feel like everybody's sort of looking forward to the football coming back and it providing that entertainment and that distraction, because that, at the end of the day, is what football is about, isn't it, Robin?
Yes, it is. I mean, I think... we have a very unnatural situation at the moment. People have time on their hands, that a lot of people are at home where they normally wouldn't be, and therefore are spending a lot more time thinking about what's going on in the world than perhaps we normally would. So, football is it's TV that's supposed to be the opiate of the masses, but football's a pretty close second, I suspect. So, it will give us something to focus on, certainly.
Yeah. Now, I've been quite encouraged to see the amount of willing that particularly the younger players, it almost seems, have had on their social media platforms to really speak out about everything that's going on at the moment. You know, equality, racial issues are really, really up there at the moment. Di, how pleased have you been to see the amount of footballers who are confident enough to speak about such a serious issue? And from what I've seen, I haven't seen too much of the sort of stupidity of social media. I haven't seen a lot of horrible responses to the players showing that bravery.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting linking that point with the point you just talked about with Robin about the normality, if you like, of football, that when football returns, that's a kind of standard, isn't it, of normality. That's what we're kind of striving to get back to. But in a way, I think some people were kind of, obviously the financial issues as well, and according to Stuart Webber, that seems to be the main driver for the Premier League, surprise surprise, in returning to football. But it's also football is so powerful, it's transformative, and it makes people think beyond the game. And so seeing our own players, you know, the club tweeted out the picture Stronger Together of our players showing support for Black Lives Matter. That's just so powerful. It reaches so many people. And in a way, that in itself normalizes that message of equality. So, I just think football's brilliant, and people say keep politics out of football, but you know, equality for a start isn't politics. Unfortunately, I think there has been some trolling. You know, if you look at there was a really strong message, a depressing message really, from Liam Rossini yesterday. Thank and you. Obviously, the Raheem Sterling message as well on social media. And there was a significant backlash from trolls against both of those, which I think is really disappointing. But certainly from in terms of Norwich City and Norwich City supporters, I'm so pleased with the response and support for Black Lives Matters. And for the obviously, you know, it's been going on for a while now, but the welfare support that the players and the club have offered in terms of coronavirus.
Mm. Well, just as you mentioned it there, I just double checked that the club's Twitter account, just for one example, has almost 700,000 followers. So that's a significant impact you can make with releasing those sort of messages. And Connor, I mean, we've seen quite a few of the players, haven't we? And Todd, Emmy, Max, they've all felt brave enough to sort of share these things. And I know it's a little bit it's a little bit difficult, particularly for young lads. I mean, Max is still, he's what, 20, isn't he? So, the, you know, he's still a man growing up in this world and finding his way. But there are some encouraging. So, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of worrying things going on around the whole matters, and what's going on in America at the moment is really concerning. But I think from a football perspective, we've heard some stuff from Chris Hughton this morning, haven't we, that potentially this could be an opportunity for the game to move these issues forward.
Yeah, I think football is probably an example, perhaps like the rest of us in recent days and in the last week or so, that have probably looked within itself a little bit and has sort of said, right, are we doing enough? Are we promoting enough? And I think what we've got to say first and foremost is you have to praise the football club for, I guess, supporting the players to voice their opinions in that way, because I think there would be, we saw with the Mesut Ozil stuff, I think earlier this season, when Arsenal sort of distanced themselves from comments he was making about something completely different. So it's good that this kind of feels like a united push from Norwich to support their players and also to raise awareness for it. And you've mentioned the importance of social media, but yeah, I think those Chris Hughton comments are right. The Raheem Sterling ones as well in his Newsnight interview as well. I think football does need to look at itself, perhaps, because as Di said, it's been so transformative in so much of what it's done. And I still think, for me, one of the most poignant, and we've seen so many fantastic displays at Carrow Road this season, but for me, the most poignant was the flag that had, I think it was Rancic, Delia, I think it was Justin Fashanu on it as well. And I can't remember the message now. Was it welcome for or Norwich? I'm sure Di will remind me, but it was basically an inclusive message.
Is it a home for everyone?
That's it, yeah. Which was just a really beautiful display, a really poignant display. And I think that sums up the city, to be fair, in certainly my experience. But yeah, certainly a lot more to be done, certainly a lot more that we all need to do. But it's good to see footballers speak out, and it's good to see them push their opinions across, because I don't think they do it enough, in honesty, and mainly because I don't feel like they feel like they can push it across. So it's good that this next generation of younger players that have the confidence and feel like they have the club's support to voice their opinions on matters such as this.
Yeah, now Robin, I don't know if you sort of agree, but I very much feel like nowadays that Carrow Road is a very inclusive place, and that, I mean, you're probably, within football, you're never going to cancel out prejudice totally, certainly not within people's own minds. You know, hopefully we've reached a point, at least at Norwich City particularly, where people would keep those kind of negative things to themselves if that's what they believe. But I've been involved in football for 12 years now, and when you're within the game, I very much always have the sort of feel that players don't see colour. Players are used to sharing a dressing room with players from all different nations, all different languages, all different cultures, and that when you're within the game, it's not really an issue. But in the stands is where the battle is, and in wider society. But do you feel like Carrow Road is seen now as a pretty inclusive, friendly place where people can feel comfortable?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. I think Carrow Road is very, very good in on that score, and there's been a lot of work that's gone into achieving that, and obviously Proud Canaries have been at the vanguard of that work and have done a fantastic job. But I can't recall any racist abuse in recent times at all. But yeah, let's be clear on this. This isn't an issue that you can talk about solely in football terms. A racist is a racist, whether he or she's a football fan or not. And unfortunately, you know, if somebody has racist views, they're going to have racist views, and sometimes they'll express them. But I think that one of the great things about Norwich is that it's a very enlightened city generally. I think people are pretty progressive in their thinking in Norwich, perhaps more so than in certain other places.
Okay, well, just finally on this issue, and then we'll really get into the football, because obviously we know that our listeners come to us for football, but this is such a big issue at the moment. I just didn't feel it was one we could not discuss, at least to some extent. Proud Canaries, obviously equality is a massive thing that the group you're involved with is based around, isn't it? So the banner that we saw unfurled in the River End not long ago with Justin on, and I guess that's one we may see when the games are behind closed doors. But generally, the work of Proud Canaries, how much progress do you feel you've made in recent years?
I think, I mean, it's got to the point, really, that Proud Canaries can just become, I mean, one of the reasons we exist is purely to be sociable, to provide a place where LGBTQ plus fans can meet before and after games, meet with LGBT people from other clubs before and after games when we play away, whenever that happens again. Now we can kind of concentrate on that stuff because everyone else is doing the equality. We are visible. We're visible through the banners and we're visible on social media. But, you know, the Canaries Trust, the Social Club, along come Norwich, you know, virtually every other fan group and pundits and you guys as well in the media are just so supportive and offer that visibility and just make it unquestionable that everybody is welcome at Carrow Road. And I have to say, you know, I think the family of fan groups has absolutely come to the foreground during the coronavirus crisis. You know, we had a meeting that the club organised. Normally, we would have had the Global Canaries meeting at Carrow Road before. Was it going to be? I can't remember which match it was going to be before, but it was one of the matches that was called off in the lockdown, and so it didn't happen. So we had a Zoom meeting with fans from across the world the other week. And it was just so incredible. And that kind of bond, you know, with people from all cultures, all countries, who just their kind of common commonality is that they support Norwich City. That was just hugely powerful. And I think Canaries Down Under have decided to organise that on a regular basis now. You know, it's never happened before and it only happened because we were in the lockdown. But how brilliant that was. So, you know, just tribute really to the power of fans working together.
Excellent. Right. Well, I'm sure I can speak for everyone involved in our podcast when saying that equality and peace for all is what we all want to see. And fair play, you know, all power to people who are dedicating their time and efforts to really campaigning at the moment for fair rights for everyone. That's some really interesting stuff to kick off with, but let's get stuck into the football because we have had the fixtures confirmed since we last recorded the podcast, haven't we, Connor? And we are resuming the season as it was suspended. It's going to be Southampton, of course, on the Friday, but we've also heard the details of the FA Cup outlined, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, which I think is such a massive thing for Norwich and Norwich supporters. This is their first sort of quarterfinal in 28 years, isn't it? So it's not going to be the occasion we all hoped it would be, and with Carrow Road under the lights, but it's still going to be a really special day for Norwich City players, and they deserve their crack at trying to win it. And you know, because players, I think so much focus has been on the fans not being there, and rightly so. But equally, you've got a group of players there who have worked so hard, putting so much sacrifice to become a professional footballer. It's very easy to go throughout your career as a footballer without winning anything or without getting really a shot at winning anything. And to be in a quarter final of a domestic competition, whatever that is, then I think it's only right, given how much footballers sacrifice. And yes, they get paid handsomely, and that is a factor as well. But there is a lot of hard work and graft that goes in behind the scenes. And for me personally, I think this group of players and this squad deserve, after what they achieved at Tottenham and what they've achieved probably last season as well, to really have a shot at trying to win a domestic trophy. And it's obviously a competition that Norwich City haven't won. So and really whatever happens from here is a bonus, because if I'm putting on my realism hat, it's probably unlikely that they progress through to the next round. But you've got to be a little bit of a dreamer, a little bit of a believer. And I think whilst that carrot is there, they've got to try and win it. And that's the same for all of this in the last nine games. And if anything, I think if I was a player, I'd feel almost a bit more of a duty to go and perform for the supporters because they aren't there. And perhaps I'd try and take it on myself to try and perform even better. But it's going to be incredibly difficult without supporters, because I think Norwich, undoubtedly playing Manchester United, will now have less of an advantage without their home support. But it's there, it's doable, and it's possible. So they've got to try and compete for it. And I think from Daniel Farke's part, obviously I spoke to him last week, he's obviously very pleased to get that opportunity to have a go at it and to try and win it. And I think that's what they'll strive towards, and I think that's what the supporters will want to see, ultimately.
Well, Connor will have his optimist's hat on then at Southampton next Friday, which is followed by the following Wednesday at home to Everton. They're both 6 o'clock kickoffs. The Southampton game's on Sky, which is on their free-to-air channel, I think, Pick. The Everton game's on the BBC, so that's going to be a big moment. Norwich live on the BBC for the first time since, I'd imagine, late 80s, something like that, without having checked that yet. Then it's on to the Saturday with Man United at home, again on the BBC, 5:30, that FA Cup quarter-final. And then it's the following Wednesday, Arsenal away, 6 p.m. on BT Sport. Now, also, the Premier League have sort of released how the rest of the season is going to shape out, although the actual timings and finer details haven't been confirmed yet. But the following Saturday is Brighton at home. Then it's midweek Watford away. So still following the same schedule as before. Then it's back to Saturday, West Ham, or weekend, West Ham at home. Midweek is Chelsea away. Then it's weekend, it'll be Burnley at home or the FA Cup semi-final, who knows, with the season to finish at July 26th weekend at Manchester City, although, of course, we could still have the FA Cup final the following weekend as well. So we've got a bit of an outline, and this seems like a good point to just tell you the results of our poll on Twitter. We asked how confident Norwich fans are feeling about survival prospects before the fixtures resume. And winning with 36% of the vote is that the Great Escape is on. second is it's looking unlikely with 25%. Third was bring on the championship with 21%. And fourth was tough, but the break has helped with 18%. So, Robin, how are you sort of feeling? I guess we're back to that kind of putting on our optimism hats again. The sort of early season feel, aren't we, in terms of anything feels like it's possible to a certain extent because of the break?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got no idea what to expect, have we? I mean, it's completely unprecedented. There's no blueprint to refer to. Anything could happen, which makes it quite interesting, really. Obviously, the positive is that we've got pretty much a full squad available for the first time for a very long time. I think only Sam Byron remains on the injured list. But who knows? I'm neither optimistic nor pessimistic. I've got to be honest. I just think it's going to be really, really weird. And I can't get overly excited about it. But it is what it is. We'll have to see what happens.
And Di, how are you sort of feeling about those survival chances as we head back into the games?
Oh, I'm with Connor. I'm the eternal optimist. Yeah, I can see the double. against my better judgment, really, I strongly believe that football without fans is nothing. I think we all do, don't we? And it was great to hear the club say that as well when we had our Zoom meeting with them. We've heard Daniel Farke say he wants to give the guys an opportunity to show that they can do the Great Escape. But we all know it's about the money. And I think all of us wanted to make sure that everybody was as safe as they possibly could be, and I think bringing football back probably doesn't follow that kind of that priority. But against my better judgment, I have been watching the Bundesliga and supporting Paderborn, which seems to be an absolutely lost cause now. And I live quite close to Carrow Road, so I won't be venturing down there, but it's going to be really, really hard to, I'm obviously going to watch it on TV, but it's going to be really hard to know that football's going on and not be there. Anything could happen. And, what's brilliant about our team is seeing the character of the guys through the crisis, out doing stuff. With the welfare packages and sending messages on social media and phoning older fans up, and And, you know, they always seem to be doing training at home and, you know, through the club social media, we saw them catching up with each other. And they were really keen to get back into training. And there were none of, they wouldn't be, would there? But there were none of those stories that we read about from players at other clubs, you know, driving across the country and having parties, and it just wouldn't happen with our guys. So you know that they are absolutely going to give it everything. And they know that we'll be watching digitally. So, yeah, anything could happen.
Yeah, I think they're going to be really up for it. Connor, I'll come to you in a minute about the, you've been doing a bit of digging, haven't you, in terms of how the club are preparing for this and that side of how they're trying to encourage fans to stay away from things. But Robin, if I just come back to you on that meeting with the club's sort of senior staff over Zoom with the supporter groups last week, I think there was a bit more talk about the finances, wasn't there? When, early in the suspension, Ben Kensel had told us that they were planning for an £18 to £35 million loss. So that looks like it's going to be the lower end of that now, thanks to them being able to get the games played again. But I get the feeling that fans aren't that worried about dropping back into the Championship overly. If relegation happens, I don't think there's going to be a complete meltdown. The only big thing really of that is the financial worries, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. And just to come back to the figures that you quoted, what we were actually told is that, yes, the original range was expected to be between 18 and 35, but now we're expecting it's probably going to be somewhere between 12 and 15 and probably at the lower end of that scale, which is very good news. And you have to give huge credit to Zoe Stewart and Ben,
who
worked their backsides off to keep the club as financially viable as possible. I know they got stick in some quarters for the furloughing decision, but you have to be realistic and say we haven't got rich owners, we haven't got somebody who's going to underwrite a huge deficit, and we have to make savings wherever we can. And if the scheme was available, then I think they were right to go for it. That won't go down with some people, and some people are still vehemently opposed to it, but I think it was the right decision for the club, and that's what they're paid to make. But yeah, I think we're in reasonably good shape. And coming back to your first point, I agree that a lot of people are not that uncomfortable with us going back to the Championship. Not so much from a pure footballing point of view, but I think that a lot of people are very, very uncomfortable with the way in which the Premier League has shown itself in its true colours over this crisis. You know, the fact that money has trumped absolutely everything, and it's also shone a spotlight onto the way that football is administered. We have this huge amount of money that's pouring in at the top of the game, which is largely going straight out again in inflated wage packets, huge agents' fees and so on, and nothing is being built, whilst below the Premier League, the rest of the pyramid is largely being left to rot. I don't like the Premier League very much. Once you take the quality of football away from it, I think it's an institution that's built on sand, and at some point it will be washed away, whether that's because the bubble bursts financially or because the big clubs do what they've been threatening to do for years and clear off and form a European Super League. But something will snap, and I think it will snap in the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's not fun playing on a billionaire's playground when you're a millionaire, is it? it does make success that bit sweeter, though, doesn't it? Like that Manchester City win. And if they were to pull off the greatest game now, well, it is going to be satisfying because the club is going to be in quite a position to progress from there. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Connor, the immediate concern for the club is making plans for this restart in fairly sterile environment, I guess. They've got to make sure they tick all these hygiene boxes, which probably confirm that we will be at the game. We'll have at least one of us at the Southampton game. We're hopeful of more, and we're hopeful of more beyond that first game as well. But we're still firming up those plans. But of course, we'll have at least one of us there. And Paddy will be back from his paternity leave next week as well, so we're getting up to full strength as well as the Norwich City squad. But Connor, you've been doing a bit of digging on the exact plans being put in place, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and they've had to be really proactive around this. I think when you sort of perhaps think of it from a logistical perspective, it's quite difficult to think about. But obviously, the issue of supporters congregating is one they want to avoid. It's a very real issue. It's why we've throughout this had reports of neutral venues, and obviously we've seen today that the Merseyside derby is now going to take place at Goodison Park, which is fantastic news, I think, in terms for that game and for that city. Actually, it's very good. But obviously, I suppose the major concern they had was probably around the hotel in the corner, because obviously some of those rooms are pitch side rooms. They've had to have lengthy discussions, I think, with Holiday Inn, who's obviously a hotel it is, and they have agreed that those rooms won't be sold, so supporters won't be able to watch the game from in there and congregate from in there or around the grounds. And in terms of ensuring that the stadium perhaps has a bit more colour, feels a bit more lively than perhaps what we've seen in the Bundesliga at times. I know they've tried artificial crowd noise, which was beneficial. And we've also seen some Bundesliga clubs have like personalised cutouts, haven't we, of supporters. I think Brighton, I think West Ham as well are doing that in their stadiums. Norwich won't be. They've decided instead they're going to use sort of colourful banners, essentially like the ones we see in displays. There's going to be a specific one from Junior Canaries with messages of support on, which I think is a fantastic idea. Along come Norwich as well, have some ideas about different things that they want to do around it. So I think that banner scheme is a Premier League one, but I think Norwich within that are going to get their own banners to sort of decide what they want to do and modify how they like. And obviously there's going to be some responses on, that's the nature of it. But I think some of those they're going to try and make personal and try and, essentially, it's about making that connection, isn't it, with the supporters whilst they're not there. And I think that is a small, probably, a very small way of doing that. But if it makes supporters feel a bit more attached to it and a bit more connected with it, then it's better than, in my view, having perhaps a load of empty seats. I think that's about it, really. Obviously, we've seen the programmes. They're still doing those. You can get those online, can't you, and get them posted. So that's really nice as well. So there's a lot of good ideas that they're doing. They obviously had a friendly back at Carrow Road yesterday just to sort of have a run through of what a match day looks like at Carrow Road. Essentially, it was an in-house one. It was, I think, 3-3 in the end. Tim Closer scored quite the volley.
Not bad.
So I think they have put in a lot of work and a lot of effort into these plans. And obviously the message for supporters is as much as you want to be there. And they've adopted the together but apart tagline, haven't they? And I think that's really important. They need to feel supporters support, but equally they need supporters to not turn up and congregate at Carrow Road, because as we reported a week or so ago, that could lead to hefty fines and punishments for the club. And after Robin's talked so much about the financial situation and how well they've done to minimise that, I guess the last thing they want is fines on top of that to increase their woes. So,
and couldn't it lead to introduction of neutral grounds instead?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I
absolutely
think that would be devastating, wouldn't it? And we're talking about the cup as well. So I think our supporters are pretty smart. I can't imagine that it's going to be a massive problem. Do you think it is?
No,
I Paul and Leeds is the big ones, isn't it, really? They're the fans who you could see. I mean, Coventry have actually had to put out a statement this morning, haven't they?
Because some of their Robin. Unless Robin's got a tail suddenly.
Yeah, no, that's my cat, I'm afraid. He's decided to make an appearance. He'll probably talk more sense than me, to be honest.
Well, as Chris Lakey's not on the show this week, his cats normally join us. But yeah, Coventry had to sort of put out a bit of a statement after their title was confirmed in League One, because some of their fans had gathered for a bit of celebration. So
really?
I don't think that was too large scale, but they're the Liverpool and Leeds are the sort of two flashpoints. But I think generally people will be able to behave. But sorry, Connor, you were saying.
Well, I think you're spot on. I think there's I don't know, perhaps an idea around football fans as a whole that there needs to be fairly rigorous, I guess, in terms of the planning. And that's right in terms of you have to plan for that. But I think football fans in the whole are fairly sensible and they understand the situation. And as much as it will be painful, and it will be painful for supporters who can't be there, because as Di said earlier, as Norwich have said, as several other people have said, football without the fans is going to be very strange, and it's not going to be the same, and it's probably not going to feel the same or as good. But if it's a choice between without fans or having no football at all for however long, then ultimately I guess this is the decision that has had to be reached. And that's it for fans. It's going to be tough, but yeah, I mean, it's for their safety as much as anything else, and I think ultimately that's what they've got to remember, because this thing that we're all having to live with and live through hasn't gone away. So it's all about their safety, and hopefully we won't see supporters around grounds, and they'll stay at home and watch it on TV.
Di, you'll have to be our scout then as you near to Carrow Road.
I'm going to torture myself, really. What's really odd is, I can't remember why this is the case, but I have been at home sometimes when there've been matches going on. I don't know if I've been ill or, I don't know. But so that's the other thing, is like being here and not being able to hear the fans.
Yeah, because we can hear goal celebrations up the road, around the road at our offices. You can hear the cheer of a goal. So I can't imagine what it's like for a house right near the ground.
Yeah. So in a way, that kind of nullifies it as well. What's the point of going if you can't hear anything?
Well, we shall see. It'll be interesting. But yeah, that friendly, the teams were split into yellows and reds. There were some under-23s players involved. Caleb Richards, Jordan Thomas, Louis Lomas, Josh Martin, who of course signed his new contract recently. And yeah, the goals, they said it was all six goals that they put in the highlights package. Adam Eder, Timmy Pukki, and that Tim Closer goal for the yellows. And then the reds came back with goals from Josip Dermich, an Andre Duda penalty, and then Duda as well, after he was set up by Max Aaron. So a 3-3 friendly. And yeah, they've got another one on Friday against Spurs at an undisclosed location. So that will get them nicely warmed up. But with all that going on, yesterday, Tuesday, we saw that the EFL had finally made their decision. And there's loads of Norwich angles in this. Points per game agreed upon. League One and League Two clubs agreeing to curtail their season, although the Championship is planning to go ahead the same as the Premier League. So the main one is Coventry, who, as we mentioned, won the League One title. They are managed by Mark Robbins, of course, former Norwich striker, and they've got Sam McCallum at left back, who's played a big part for them. Norwich agreed to a deal worth up to £3.5 million for him in January, so he comes in on a high. Sean Raggett with Portsmouth is heading into the playoffs. Isaac Thorvaldsen as well with Fleetwood, although he's only made a couple of brief substitute appearances for them. So I think that their deals have got to technically still be extended, but I guess that won't be an issue. You've got Russell Martin, Carlton Morris and Louis Thompson at MK Dons. They all stay clear of relegation, so Russ has done a decent job there. Remy Matthews relegated with Bolton. There's angles everywhere, but Robin, I'll give you the good un. Lowest position since 1953 for Ipswich. Paul Lambert has been publicly backed since by Town's general manager, but Ipswich, despite some attempts to try and drag the playoffs down to mid-table, are staying put.
Yeah, tragic, isn't it? But yeah, I thought the playoff proposal was pretty remarkable, suggesting that basically the playoffs could be open to anybody who fancied it, really. But I think it shows the level of delusion that reigns in Suffolk.
It does. But Di, I'm always I think I'm slightly different to a lot of Norwich fans, in that I lived with an Ipswich fan at uni for 2 years. So I sort of have a bit of a fun side of the rivalry, and I love the derby days because I love the banter and stuff. So we know, unless there's a cup draw next year, that there's not going to be a derby. But personally, I wouldn't want to see that continue for too long, because it's kind of like Superman and Lex Luthor. Norwich need Ipswich to a certain extent.
Oh no. No. I like the derby in theory, but it's just torturous. It's torment. Never enjoyed it.
Never enjoyed it.
No, I can't. I get excited about it beforehand and obviously love it when, you know, we triumph, but it's just so painful.
Well, I'm sure we can stomach seeing them down there for one more year, but let's just hope there's still two divisions between.
Just great to see Lambert squirm, and presumably he'll be telling us what a brilliant result it is.
Yeah, and how great the fans are. But he signed a new long-term contract as well, didn't he? So it's interesting they backed him. Matt Gill, of course, is assistant there as well. So we'll watch with interest. Well, let's worry about Norwich before we crow too much, I suppose. But another few nice angles in there. Conor Diallo-Ndiaye, seeming Norwich have letting him go at the end of his contract, but he's got a League Two winners' medal as well. So there's loads of Norwich angles to this, aren't there?
Yeah, Paul Warne as well. Norwich City fan back in the Championship. He's done a remarkable job at Rotherham. He really has with limited funds. I think him and Mark Robbins are very quietly doing very good jobs actually at their respective clubs. And it's probably a shame Pad's not here to talk about the Coventry promotion. But you know, I mean, if you look at that club, I mean Mark Robbins in particular, just to touch on him. If you look at where that club has been and all of the goings on off the pitch with the stadium and not having a real home stadium to achieve what they've achieved this season. I mean, I went to watch them once this season to go and watch Sam McCallum at St Andrews, and they were playing Bolton, who were obviously in a pretty dire state. But I mean, some of the football they played was very good actually, and perhaps not what you'd associate with a League One side. But they got the ball down, they played really well, and I guess from a Norwich perspective, the fact that Sam McCallum is sort of developing in that environment is really positive. But I mean, yeah, you've got to give credit to Mark Robbins because they were what, in League Two, I think, when he came in. They're now going to be playing in the Championship, and hopefully they can get back to the Rico and have a good go next season as well, because that's obviously a massive club and I think it deserves to be in probably the top two divisions at least. But yeah, lots of Norwich City angles, and yeah, so pleased for Paul Warne
as
well.
That's such a great message for football, isn't it?
It is.
Connor, you know, you could have seen a couple of years back, you could have seen that they were just going to go out of the Football League. Yeah. It's just been such an amazing battle against adversity and financial problems.
Yeah, and for their fans as well, who had to endure when they were playing their home games at Northampton. You know, it's been a real struggle. I think they hadn't finished in the top six of a league in about 50 years, and he was the first manager to achieve that. So they're a club back on the up, and it's good to see him leading that charge, because obviously he's someone I think Norwich fans remember quite fondly.
Yeah, and Coventry obviously spent a long, long time in the top flight as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
Was it from the 60s to the 90s, something like that, almost uninterrupted. So yeah, a real, real big club, and good to see them sort of back on the rise. And yeah, we'll get Mr. Davitt's thoughts on that next week, if he's awake as a new father, of course.
He'll be partying.
I'm sure he will. He'll be able to get a title winner's baby grow or something, won't he?
exactly, yeah.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
So, yes, lots of angles on that one. And of course, pinken.com is the place to go if you want to read all the details that came out on Tuesday. We did have a little bit as well. It looks like the transfer window is probably going to run between August and October. Latest reports are that that next season will start mid-September for the Championship and the Premier League. So there's still a fair bit to be worked out there. European football, of course, I haven't quite worked that out yet. I think UEFA meeting is due next week, and it sounds like they're going to try and play the Europa League and the Champions League in August, perhaps in one location, and just sort of cram the games into quite a short space of time. But I think we're just about seeing how football is going to look, but of course without fans. And we've got a question along those lines, which was tweeted to us by Billy Durrant. Robin, I'll come to you first on this, and then come to Diane Connor as well. Very simply, will it be harder to get fired up for the games without any crowd? I think he's meaning for the players. Do you think that they will really be able to feel the support, even though fans won't be there?
I think it's going to be very, very difficult for players. It's quite interesting, actually, in the video conference last week, Stuart Webber was talking about how they'd been checking on what had happened in the Bundesliga. And he said that initially the players were coming back fired up and excited to be playing again. And after a couple of weeks, they were developing a bit of a, why on earth am I doing this attitude? So I think it's going to be very, very hard for players. You know, when you've been used to playing in front of thousands and thousands of people, playing in an empty ground is very difficult. I mean, you know, as a footballer myself. I never played in front of more than about 2,000 people, and considerably less than that most of the time. But playing in an empty ground, you know, turning out for the reserves after injury or something, was just really weird. So, you know, multiply that by, you know, quite a big factor, and it must have a huge psychological impact on players.
Yeah, Di, if I come to you next.
In a way, I think we're our guys are going to be at a bit of an advantage, because it's quite unusual for them to be on TV. Well, it wasn't last year, obviously, in the Championship we always were, but in the Premier League it has been. And and they're not, you know, it's wonderful as Carrow Road is. It's not Old Trafford. It's not the Etihad. So, and our guys, you know, some of them quite recently have been in comparatively low leagues. So I think psychologically they've got a pretty good armoury, really. And, you know, the management and the club organisation is just brilliant. And I think in a way it sets us up a lot better than it does some clubs. It's not great. And there must be a big part of successful footballers that is about feeding off the fans and the atmosphere in the stadium. And one of the things about watching the Bundesliga has been that just appalling echo of an empty ground. I'm imagining that the piped sounds might only be on TV rather than actually in the ground.
I think they are. It's a bit. A couple of the games I've watched the highlights from in Germany, it has really sounded like it's in the stadium as well. And certainly, I wrote in a column probably a couple of weeks ago now that when some of the clubs have got goal music, like Norwich do, don't they? And that actually helps a little bit with a goal celebration, because it feels a little bit more normal. But yeah, I thought that the sort of funneling fake crowd noise into the stadium would almost come across as kind of patronising. But from what I've seen, it actually seems like it's kind of worked. But
didn't they do it at Spurs? When the new stadium opened at Spurs, it was very quiet, and there was a suggestion that they'd been piping fans into the.
And there has been suggestion of Liverpool doing it with "You'll Never Walk Alone" as well, haven't they? Because really? not all games have the sort of volume that their big nights. So, you know, obviously, when we were there on the opening night of this season, they didn't need any help, did they? Because they were celebrating winning the European Cup, yeah. But. Yeah, I think that to build on Robin's point a bit, Connor, that some of these games are going to be dead rubbers. Hopefully, from a Norwich point of view, they're not. But I think, is it Crystal Palace v Burnley is live on the BBC? Yeah. I mean, if you're, a player for either of those teams, motivation might be a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah, and this is the point about sort of the restart in a way. The majority of clubs haven't got a lot to play for. And so the sort of those who are shouting the loudest are teams that are either affected by it from a relegation perspective, or they've got something to win or promotion to win, etc. So I think Roy Hodgson came out yesterday and said actually this would be a really good opportunity for him to sort of bed in some of his younger players. Right. And now if you think about that a little bit, and I think it was Josh Martin's quotes the other day that I read, and I was kind of thinking this might be an environment actually that young players prefer more than experienced players, because they're used to playing in those environments at training grounds, in empty stadiums, and performing within those settings. And if you look at someone like Tim Krul, who's had the Barclay, used to play in front of the Gallagher end, didn't he, at Newcastle, thrives off that atmosphere as well. That contrast, I think, is interesting. We could see perhaps younger players performing better than more experienced players. And equally, I think you're going to see when Norwich go to Stamford Bridge and when they go to the Emirates and when they go to the Etihad, actually, in that stadium, it's still going to be what it is, which is a magnificent architecture, which is probably the only time I'll say that on this podcast. But it's going to be empty, and so everything about playing there is going to be reduced to an extent, and it's just going to be a pitch with seats around it essentially. So again, that could be something that works to Norwich's benefits, and I think that's probably a reason why home advantage hasn't been as significant in the Bundesliga since the return. So I think there's a few points like that I'm interested to see how they develop in terms of young talent and in terms of perhaps home advantage and whether that has a significance. So I think that there's also some intriguing sort of sporting things to come out of this as well, and what happens on the pitch. But yeah, it's going to be very strange. I mean, you're going to be able to hear the players shout, you're going to be able to hear the communication. So I think in terms of for fans, it's going to be almost like everything stripped back. But for Norwich, it could do them some good, actually, to maybe take some of that pressure off their backs, I guess, a little bit. But we'll see how it pans out. They've got to hit the ground running, and obviously they've got five massive home games, and without supporters, that is obviously going to have an effect. It's just a case of how well they can adapt to not having supporters and whether they can actually harness it and use it a little bit as an advantage. So we shall see. But yeah, I think there are a lot of those middle of the road teams that are probably going to be sort of looking at each other going, why are we doing this? Because for them, it's pretty meaningless, and they're only probably putting themselves at risk more than anything else, really.
I'm certainly not looking forward to covering games without fans. We, in Germany in pre-season last year, we covered a behind-closed-doors game at the hotel that City was staying at, that the fans weren't allowed into because the complex wasn't set up to have a load of fans come and watch a football game. And while that annoyed some of the fans, understandably, who were on tour, it wasn't a particularly nice game to come from our point of view, knowing that the fans couldn't come in. So that was something that I was quite aware of. But that one thing you mentioned there, that you can hear everything the players are saying from a reporter's point of view, that's kind of gold.
It's great. Yeah, it's great.
To
match reports will have we'll have quotes in now.
Yeah. Grant Hanley shouted.
Lots of I think Sky are going to be apologising for language quite a lot, though.
I think they are, yeah.
Quite possibly. Yeah. Just finally a couple of things. Di did mention Germany, and we did have an improvement for Philipp Heiser, who is the Norwich player who has been in action. He's been playing, of course, for Nuremberg in the second tier. He got an assist, set up an equaliser actually against the Bundesliga 2 leaders Arminia Bielefeld. He seems like he's had a bit of a rocky restart over in Germany, so he got a full 90 minutes as well, so it looks like he's got himself sort of up to speed. But as you say, Dennis Srabini with Paderborn not looking good. They're 8 points from the relegation playoff with four games left. But they have had successive promotions to the Bundesliga, haven't they, Di? So I guess they can a little bit comparable to Norwich, aren't they? And if they do go back down, they're still pretty happy with their overall situation.
Yeah, and they were playing playing Dortmund last weekend, weren't they? So it was no surprise, really.
Yeah, they got a draw against Leipzig, didn't they?
Yeah, that was decent. Well,
yeah.
So not all is lost.
So an up and coming club there, and I think Srabini's already talked a little bit as well about how he, you know, it could be good for him playing in the second division as well, because he's obviously managed to keep scoring goals. So we'll keep watching Germany with interest. Nelson Oliveira is back in action in Greece with AEK Athens. Ivo Pinto is playing in Portugal. So the football world is slowly moving back in, and I've read a few reports that even in Italy and in Spain, that they are looking at potentially having some fans in stadiums, or having maybe 10,000 very much socially distanced. So there has been a few mentions that the FA Cup final could even have that at Wembley. So we shall see how things evolve over the next couple of weeks. I did just want to ask, Di, as we had you on, you're involved with Norwich City Women, aren't you? And clearly everything's been sort of cancelled for this season, but where do you go, you ladies, sorry, would be a better phrase to use, stand in terms of when you might be able to start playing football again, or even training?
Yeah, it's up in the air, as is everything, and it does feel a little as if the FA have just kind of swept the women's leagues to one side, and National League and lower leagues as well, in order to concentrate on the Premier League. So, I mean, all I can say is that the it's a pretty new operation, really, in terms of Sean, the new manager, and the new management committee, and the new forging of the relationship with Norwich City as the overarching family club.
You have all the kit, proper kit and stuff now, don't you? The latest kit.
Yeah, it's so much better, and those foundations have been built, with a lot of work over the last year. So when it does start, I think it's pretty exciting. And, you know, there's no doubt that finishing the season is without being relegated is a good thing. So let's take that and really build on it for the future. And I think the future promises some great things from Norwich City Women.
Good stuff. Well, fingers crossed that everybody at sort of the lower levels of football can get back to playing as well, because I'm sure as much as we all talk about the Premier League, a lot of people play football as well who haven't been able to actually kick a ball about. So unfortunately not me. I can't remember the last time I played football, actually.
I mean, one of the few things I've been doing consciously in lockdown as a kind of self-improvement exercise is keepy uppies, because I've always been ashamed of how few I could do, and I did manage last week. This might be the only time in my life I managed 23, so I was quite pleased with myself, really.
Nice. Well, Paddy claimed he could do over 100.
No way! Oh, don't give up.
No, Robin, you must have been able to do it for you.
Yeah.
I am going to give up.
Yeah, I think I'd struggle these days, then.
And Connor, of course, you nearly made it, didn't you? You were nearly a pro, so.
Well, I always say if I'd had a bit more ability, then I probably could have been a professional footballer, so.
Good stuff. Well, I'd imagine I'd struggle to do 10 now, so who knows, but. At least we're moving back towards a bit of normality. Thank you very much for joining us, Robin and Di. It's been really interesting to get your thoughts. And, of course, next week we'll really be able to crank things up as we build up to that Southampton game. As I say, Paddy will be back on board and be great to have a catch-up with him as well. So thank you very much for listening. As ever, this is your podcast as much as it is ours. So if you ever want to get in touch with us, then please do send us a message on social media, or you can email us on norfolksport@archant.co.uk. You can also listen to us on Wednesday nights on Future Radio 107.8 FM. And any ratings or reviews are always very welcome. If you're not subscribed to the pod, please do. As I said at the top of the show, this is episode 403, so we're going pretty strong. Stay safe, look after yourself. Let's hope the weather picks up a little bit ahead of the weekend, and we will catch up with you very soon.